As part of an exhibition linked to the 70th anniversary of the Lidice massacre in June, Prague's Dock Gallery is currently hosting a video installation by the London-based Czech documentary maker and editor Jan Kaplan, entitled 1035. The name refers to the time of day that the operation to assassinate the Nazi governor of Bohemia and Moravia, which preceded the Lidice atrocity, reached its climax in a Prague suburb on May 27, 1942. The UK-based Czechoslovak paratroopers who carried out the attack later met their deaths in a church in the city. 1035 is based on material from SS3, The Assassination of Reinhard Heydrich, a documentary that Jan Kaplan made in the early 1990s. We spoke about that film and questions linked to Operation Anthropoid at a Prague cafe recently. But I began by asking its maker when he had first gone to England, the country that's been his home now for over four decades.
I went to England in 1967, first time, because I liked the English language and I liked things connected with England. At that point, London was the centre of the universe, you know, the Beatles and everything.
Had you decided to stay there before the invasion in 68?
Well, it was decided for me because they came here, the Russians, and I thought maybe not a good idea to come back. Because I worked at that time I worked in the Czechoslovak television studios in Vladislavovo and in the news and current affairs department. I was actually going to go to FAMU, the film school, that autumn. So I had actually a guaranteed course in film editing, which was what I did. But then I thought, well, maybe they would draft me to the army, which I was in a kind of age that I would probably be in the army. And I didn't think, I wasn't optimistic enough to think I'll end up in the film unit, in the army. I wasn't rebellious, but I was telling people what I thought, and they would probably beat me to pulp. So I thought it's better to stay in London.
And you studied filmmaking in London.
Yes.
What kind of films were you making in the earlier part of your career in the UK?
Very interesting films. I got involved in a number of very interesting productions, sort of films that I would never dream to do here. Although here I did some interesting films during the Prague Spring on subjects like Franz Kafka, because that was very popular for German television, featuring Eduard Kochticker, the number one Kafkolog of his day. And then I met him almost instantly in London, because he went to London as well. And then on the day of the Russian invasion, we happened to sort of meet in the studio. So he remembered me because it was so recent. And then I think he stayed as well. He taught at Sussex University in the German literature department. And I went on to work in the cutting rooms. I did some very interesting work on anything with television production, documentaries, sports programs, which I wasn't that keen on, but a film about William Blake, which won an award in Tokyo soon afterwards, and so on, yeah.
In the early 1990s, you made a film about the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich. What was it that attracted you to that subject?
I wanted to see that son of a bitch die all over again. No, we did it with my wife, Christina. We decided that it was the 50th anniversary. And originally, we didn't even think that this film will be shown in the Czech Republic, purely because it's such a controversial subject. And someone told us that this would be a very good thing to show in England, because at that point, not many English people knew about the assassination. In fact, I organized or initiated the first ever exhibition at the Imperial War Museum in London on this subject. And only a few people who were, you know, kind of interested in the SOE and all that. But the average person in England did not know who Heydrich was. You know, they were more interested in Hitler and Goebbels and Himmler, you know, which was the sort of, you know, somebody recognizable, whereas Heydrich sounded like very remote.
But isn't the assassination of Heydrich one of the most exciting stories of World War II?
Tell them. But they know now. They were very... that program was shown how many times? Twice on the BBC and many, many times on Channel 5, which was at the time called the Hitler Channel, because they were showing only war films. History Channel. All over the world.
When you made the film, did you have a great sense of responsibility, considering how important the story is to this country?
Of course. I mean, we're certainly not going to treat it lightly. I mean, we knew this was no Monty Python. I mean, this was absolutely, you know, serious, and there were so many human lives lost, and I didn't know it had such going to have such an impact. I mean, talking millions and millions and millions of people around the world who we are told seen it. And the most surprising reaction I ever got to that was from the German filmmaker Leni Riefenstahl, who I spoke to in London on the occasion of a launch of her autobiography. And she was about 96, 97 at the time. And she said she saw it many times. She recorded it off television and apparently watched it and was very complimentary, and she was very well made. But she emphasized that she did not like Heydrich as a person.
You obviously are an expert on this subject, and you've studied it backwards. You know it extremely well. Do you think Operation Anthropoid was the right thing to do?
I can't answer your question about what I think moral, because I've been asked that many times. And it's not really up to me, or up to us with Christina, to pass a moral judgment. We are documentarians. We're not historians. And I think that there's been tremendous amount of controversy about was it worth it. I can tell you one thing, that it's become more, the Operation Anthropoid has been more and more appreciated as time goes by from the purely historical point of view, although at the time the Brits were very reluctant to support it for various reasons, and they thought it was a kind of a, you know, President Benesch's act of political kind of strategy to attract the sympathy of the British government and so on.
But that was the case, no?
It was. Initially, absolutely. But the Brits said, and this is where history kind of takes its own course, the Brits said, well, you know, we know it's really your thing, and we will help you as much as we can, and we'll train your man, and we'll give, you know, we'll supply the transportation, you know, the plane and so on. And, you know, but we have nothing to do with it, right? Or we don't want to be kind of part of this thing because there's going to be... They told him there's going to... Well, he must have known that the reaction will be bloody, you know, horrible. But looking at it with the benefit of hindsight, Heydrich was probably one of the most dangerous Nazis who ever lived. He was due to fly to France. In France, he would probably very quickly take on the resistance, totally destroyed, because he knew how to, he was an expert in inverted commas, and it could have affected the further development of the war, I mean, in terms of D-Day, which was also realigned. So maybe, you know, the D-Day wouldn't happen the way it did if Heydrich was there in France, you know, with his ability, and he was an evil genius. He knew how to, you know, how to harm the enemies of the Reich. You know, he would, as a head of Gestapo and so on. So France may not actually be the launch pad for the Allied invasion of Europe, for example. So from that point of view, purely militarily, and it was a military operation in the end, because these were soldiers, the two men who, or three men, whatever the interpretation is, and Heydrich was a general of the SS. He was, so it was like soldiers on against an officer. One other thing that the British have, the Munich Treaty was declared invalid, and President Benesch became a recognized head of state, which he had a lot of problems with in Britain, because they said, you got a president, it's called Hacha. And as you know, he abdicated, so he wasn't. Oh, he resigned in 1938 after the Munich conference.
Was it the case that that kind of operation was unusual at that time?
Yes, it was. The commando, this type of warfare was considered ungentlemanly by the British, believe it or not. We British don't fight like that. This is dirty war. Well, show me a clean war. You know, but it wasn't. The commando war has not been established the way it's now. Well, now it's all virtually commando fighting behind the enemy lines and killing people and assassinating. So that's what happened, yeah. But it wasn't popular, no. And in fact, there were some people in the parliament, British parliament, that condemned it, didn't they, at the time? I think that they were surprised they pulled it off, because they looked kind of amateurish. And let's face it, I mean, a lot of it was very amateurish. The fact that they were sharing, doing the opposite what they should have done, like they were sharing flats all over Prague, you know. They should have never actually, from the other missions, the groups, because that's why the man who betrayed them ultimately So many people died as a result because they were just saying, hey, go over there, you can hide there. They should have totally separated. And also they should not visit any friends or families, which they did. So that brought about a lot of unnecessary deaths, breaking the basic rules of conspiracy. So we can't just blame it on the operation itself, but the way some of the men behaved, seeing their families, sharing accommodation with other people, that was asking for trouble, and it did happen.